Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
This is Believe in Vikings with B-Mac and Baker. I am your host, Dustin Baker, here with Bryant McKinney, Sal Spice, and Ron Saw. Typical panel for every Monday and Wednesday night. We're going to talk about the New York Jets, who are 7-4, that will step foot into U.S. Bank Stadium in about 3 or 4 days, depending on when you listen to this, and talk about some of the items surrounding the Vikings. We'll go for about 20, 30 minutes on this Wednesday to get you up to speed for Jets-Vikings, that is on the docket in Week 13. Foremost, though, basketball is back, and BetOnline remains your number one source for all of your sports betting needs this season. You'll always find the latest odds, team matchup information, player news, and game trends at BetOnline. And as your continued source for all of your sports wagering information, BetOnline features live betting, free contests, and giveaways all season long. Always the fastest and easiest way to bet on all of your favorite sports events, whether that's NFL, NBA, NHL, MMA, tennis, boxing, and even golf. Head to betonline.ag to join and receive your 50% welcome bonus with your first deposit. Make sure to use your promo code BLEAV, that's Bleav, BLEAV, to receive your rewards. BetOnline, where the game starts. Bleav in Vikings, the November 30th edition, or the Week 13 edition. The Vikings host the New York Jets, the final game in a three-game homestand that started off absolutely rotten, but had gotten better with a win over Bill Belichick. Before we hop into some of the Jets topic, we want to ask Bryant, who spent some time last week at the Vikings headquarters in Eagan. We got in a group chat pictures of him kicking it with Kirk Cousins, Kevin O'Connell. So tell us about your experience, Bryant. I bet Sally will have follow-up questions.
Okay. It was a great experience. Tom West from the PR, from the Vikings PR, had invited me to come to the Saturday morning practice. And I had never been to the facility too. So at the same time, they, you know, showed me around, and it's like a whole new world. like a whole campus. They showed me how they have the Omni Hotel over there. They have like apartments, you know, in that same area where I guess guys can stay if they want to. And I would have stayed there because you're right there at the practice field. You don't have to go far. But everything is pretty much convenient. They have like team stores, like a bunch of stuff like over there in that area, and they're still continuing to build. They're not even finished. So that was really nice. And I see like the practice field, the outdoor practice field and stuff. And then I see an indoor one, because that's where they were for Saturday's practice. I made a joke on my story. They had like a Gatorade slushy machine. I said, oh, they got wet willies in here. You know, or like Fat Tuesday. That's what it kind of looked like. But everything is like very convenient and just way better. And then I see myself on a picture from the 2009. I didn't even remember taking the picture. The group of us who got selected for the Pro Bowl for 2009, we took a picture out on the practice field. And I'm looking like, never seen that picture in my life.
Who all's in it?
I remember seeing like me, Sidney Rice, Brett Favre, Adrian Peterson. Hutch. I'm going to say
Hutch Percy was there. Harden,
Hutch.
Kevin Hutch Williams, Garrett Allen, probably.
Next to me. Who?
Kevin Williams, Garrett Allen, probably.
All those guys.
A giant photo. Well, we'll have to pull it up.
When I get it, I have to see it again. It was a few.
Yeah, post it when you find it, because I would love to see that.
Yeah,
I saw it on a story, but yeah, like I couldn't.
There were 10.
Pick out all the players.
How many's the most from one team?
Ooh, I don't know. I'll have to pull that one.
Because that's back when before it was a million alternates. Like,
yeah, right. Yeah, it was Favre, Peterson, Rice, Bryant McKinney, Steve Hutchinson, Jared Allen, Kevin Williams, Antoine Winfield, Percy Harvin. Yeah, that's where the list cut off.
Heath Farwell.
No, he was
on. Yeah, he, I believe, was in the picture as well.
Wow. Where was that hanging up at, Brian?
They have like a wall of like throughout the years. So like ours was from, I think, 2000, 2010. And that was one of the pictures from that era that they had up. Because they have it separated like different eras or whatever. So it had to be separated differently because I was in two different eras. I must was the early 2000s. Then I was like late 2000s. I don't know. Somehow it ended up being split up. I was in two different eras on that. On that board.
The Ravens in 19 had 12, and that's the record. So.
Oh, wow. What year but does was that it? Include alternates, though? Because that's the...
19 might as well.
Yeah, so right. The picture, right, I'm, so the picture, I'm looking at the picture because I'm looking at the video. So it's me, Hutchinson, Favre, AP, Jared Allen, Heath, Kevin Williams, Percy Harvin, and Sidney Rice.
Yeah, because when it used to be after the Super Bowl, as many people wouldn't bail out as now.
Mm-hmm.
But
and when it was in Hawaii.
Well, right, right.
Yeah, now there's not even a game. It's just a skills competition and the title that you were Pro Bowl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Which
I mean, they're changing now, right?
Yeah.
What made them change it? Just to stay away from injuries?
Last year's game was an embarrassment. I played better two-hand touch in my backyard. Like, it was literally... Someone would catch the ball.
Like, watch them do other things.
It was
like,
bad. Oh, yeah. You don't need to see them playing. I remember back when Daryl Green, when he was 41 years old and made it, and he was running the 40-yard dash with, Andre Johnson and, like, these guys that are elite speedsters at the time. Mm. And here he is at 41, keeping up with them and even beating a couple of them.
Let people like T.O. try to just join back in and race some of these guys. Something I see him do that a lot on social media.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah.
I need to follow him. I didn't see that.
So on yep.
Well, okay. What was so you met Kevin O'Connell and Kirk Cousins and all that. So how did that go?
He was a lot taller than I expected.
Which one?
Kevin
O'Connell was definitely a lot taller than that.
Yeah, he's about my height.
Like 6'4"?
6'4", 6'5". Mm-hmm.
Yeah, something up there. I didn't expect that. And then, like I said, Darisaw, he came up to me first when they broke practice and, just saying like, let's exchange numbers, stay in touch. And he's looking forward. He wants to come back on the podcast. I did keep throwing it out there that I'll do a podcast when Kurt was over there too. Kurt came over and immediately was talking to me about all the different hurricanes that he was familiar with or played with. And then he told me the same exact story, which was funny, that Santana Moss. So he said, my first touchdown was to a hurricane, Santana Moss. I said, what's funny is Santana was just on our podcast and told us that same exact story. He was like, really? I'm like, yes. So and he was very nice too. And he came right up because like where I was standing is like they didn't have to come up. Practice is over, they could have left. Like, but they just walked over. Those guys walked over. And then so did the head coach.
Oh, that's nice.
He talked to him too. And then, of course, he's like, you still got a few snaps in you. I said, yeah, probably three games. That's it. He's like, and that's fine.
Yeah, we need January.
Goal line package. We need a big man touchdown.
Yeah, we need some help right now. It's looking a little bleak. Just substitute for Darisaw, and when he's good, you can go sit down.
That was the
while he's out, I could just fill in, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Speaking of, I've been listening to a lot of Green Bay Wine Line, just because this year there's just been a lot of content, and it's so funny. They have been calling in every week and pitching ideas to shuffle the offensive line around. And it's just so funny. I mean, it's the fans, obviously, so whatever. But it's so funny to hear the fans saying, well, there's not much difference in playing left guard and right guard. Or
oh, it really is.
And I'm just like, wow, I'm so glad we're not having this conversation this year for once.
Right.
Yeah. In fact, it's the exact opposite, Sally. Like, all of the guys besides Darisaw stay in the same spot. They're healthy.
You know what's funny is I mentioned that to oh, so their O-line coach. Why he used to play in the league too?
And Chris Cooper.
He's familiar with like DJ Wentz. He played in Denver, so he was familiar with a bunch of hurricanes as well. I forgot he came up to me too, and he was talking about. And he was all, "How are these offensive linemen be losing so much weight? So for, like, it's a struggle for me. How do you play offensive line? He was like, yeah, I'm like, wow. But He played around the same time. He retired maybe a year before me, but we were talking offensive line stuff. He asked me a few questions. I gave some answers, but I forget what I was about to say. But
probably the moving around on the line, everyone's staying.
Oh, I said to him, I said, well, I'm glad you don't do what that old coach did and move everybody around out of position and stuff like that. So I'm glad to see that. You just plug people
what's
in.
Funny,
so
though.
With shuffling that, the whole line, like, I hated it.
What's funny
what did he say? What did he say to that?
He kind of just laughed at me when I said it, though, but I was telling the truth. I really hate it.
But what's funny about that, like, if there's ever a year, like, and an injury to do that with, this would have been the year because Darisaw's, you know, the stud left tackle, and Ezra Cleveland was a left tackle all throughout college. So if there was ever a year where it would have made sense is kicking him outside and bringing in a left guard to play. But I'm glad that they're not. I mean, Brandel, he's had his faults, but he's no Darisaw, but he's held up just fine against a couple of good defenses.
And then at the end of the day, you still got to give that guy some
maybe not
experience. You know what I'm saying? Like, okay, we're going to put you in here with live boys just to see what you look like, but at least give you some type of experience. You know what I mean? We know that Darisaw will be back in a couple weeks, but let's just see how you perform, you know, instead of, you know, taking everybody out of their comfort zone and they're, you know, Ezra's on the other side and used to communicating with that guy. Like, everything had become, you know, a little different because now the communication and getting used to, so not only moving to the other side, but now getting used to working with somebody else who you haven't worked with all year long is also another factor too. So it's like, just keep them over there. They've been gelling together all year and you just come in and, you know, try to fill it in.
That was the segue I was trying to get in here, Brian. So last week against Belichick and that Patriots pass rush, which is pretty awesome, the Vikings held their own, and that includes Blake Brandel, who's filling in for Darisaw. But my question to you, in your experience, even though you didn't come out of the game very often or weren't very hurt, how long can we keep getting away with this usually for, you know, a young, low, late round backup tackle? Is it, you know, should we start to get antsy or should we give him the benefit of the doubt?
How much longer is Darisaw out?
Well, we kind of thought that he by the books because of the early Thanksgiving game, 10 days rest, that he should be back, but he didn't practice at all. And the way that O'Connell said today is that there's no timetable for return, which is really spooky sounding with a concussion. So I'm almost certain he won't play Sunday just based on the way O'Connell would usually be optimistic. Mm-hmm. So I would say at least another week, maybe longer than that, because it's concussions and back-to-back games.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's getting just more exposure. He just make sure he studies film and just kind of go out here and just not make it seem like it's a big drop off. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. At that point, my mindset always going in, always was like, I don't ever want to look like the weakest link, you know? And that was when I got to college. That's when I got to the pros too. Even like my rookie year, I came in late and all the other guys on the line were, you know, super veterans. They've been there 4 or 5 years or better. I just always wanted to, I didn't want to make it look like I was the weakest link. So I just did what I needed to do to kind of hold my, you know, hold my end down. And I guess that's kind of the mindset that he needs to take is just figure out like what you can do so you don't. So, cause you know, when they zoom in the offensive line, it's either you're holding, you jumped those sides or just a play happened on you. So just don't let them zoom in on you.
Sally, we
and especially playing that left tackle spot, like as a backup, like you, if your quarterback's getting destroyed from the blind side.
And that's what I want to say too. Cause
yeah.
In Kurt's mind, he's not really thinking about who's over there because he had been used to having Darisaw there. So it's just like, da, 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 and just like, I have a comfort zone where now that comfort zone can start to get uncomfortable if he keeps getting hit from the blind side because those hits are the hits that you can't prep for.
Right.
Sally, we come from a long, decade-long cynicism about offensive line performance. So I think normally when we hear, oh, a backup, blah, 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 is going to be playing this week, we're like, oh, shit, here we go. But Blake Brandel and Chris Cooper proved that it didn't have to be the case against the Patriots. Do you hold the same sort of optimism, I guess, coming off the heels of that game going into the Jets game?
Well, I do feel like, was it against Washington that they really struggled as well? I mean, they started off this season a lot better than we have seen in a long time. And that has slipped a little bit due to injuries and maybe playing a little bit stronger defenses up front. I would say compared to the way that I felt the last several years, I guess maybe that's why I'm not panicking about it that much, mm-hmm. because it's still better than that. And as we just discussed, there's not the shuffling and the miscommunications and the disconnect. So while, you know, you would prefer the starters to be in there, you prefer Darrisaw, especially as good of a season as he's having, to be healthy enough to go, I would rather, you know, him have some rest now and be healthy down the stretch and in the playoffs. So I'm not as concerned about it as I would typically be. They're also, you know, with having, they're having the pass game opened up, they can get the ball out quick, and it's, that's an option now, at least.
Ron, we know that this coaching staff cares about the offensive line. We always kind of wondered if they didn't understand that this was a problem for the previous 8 seasons. So at least they have that going for them. Are you confident that because they, for the most part, kept the Belichick pass rush in check, they can do the same against the Jets, which is no joke either?
Well, and I think that's the biggest thing. It's Matthew Judon obviously came in and has been having a great year. The Jets, I don't know who they're leading. I was trying to look to who's leading their team in sacks. They have a good defense. I'm not going to, you know, step around that. But I think their defense is more predicated, at least from the bits that I've seen. But again, that's against the Bears and some other not very good offenses. They're just – they don't blow coverages, and they're very good in, at tackling. They don't give up a lot of big plays. So I don't know if I know they have, what is it, Jannard Avery? Is that who they have? Or it's a guy from Cincinnati that they got a couple of years ago that, or tore his ACL last year, whatever. But this would be a game where I would not happily rest Darrisaw, but to give him that extra time to get back, because obviously we do need him for the playoffs, and the two concussions in, you know, a week span. I don't like to hear that, especially after the whole Tua ordeal. Now, again, Tua's back now and looking great. So good, no ill effects from that as of yet. I don't want to see any lingering effects into the playoffs with Darrisaw, because he's going to be a big contributing factor into us competing and winning games. So I'm fine with, you know, Brandel, however it's said, playing now. And just hopefully that, you know, it's the Jets, we're at home. Like, that's the other aspect. If it was a backup offensive tackle on the road, it's a little bit more concerning. But I think, again, based on what he did on Thursday night, totally fine with letting him roll out there another day. That group has the cohesion. And then take it from there.
The Jets pass rush consists of kind of sack by committee, pressure by committee. And one thing they'll be paying the ass is Quinnen Williams lines up in the middle of the line. And that's kind
of the middle is nasty.
It's going to be Ingram versus Williams, and Williams will win that. And then Carl Lawson on the edge, a couple more interior guys, Bryce
Huff.
That's
what I was thinking of.
Yep. John Franklin Myers. And then Jermaine Johnson on the other side has two and a half sacks.
Oh, I forgot about him. Eden Prairie's own.
Yeah. So they don't have a edge rusher like Judon, but they have Quinnen Williams right on the inside, which is probably even more scary compared to the weak spot of this offensive line.
Do you know Chaz Surratt's on their team?
Yeah, he's on the practice squad. Drew Samia's on the
he played last reserve. Week. He got a tackle.
Who did?
Surratt.
Oh, they activated him. Okay. Yep. And then Remmers hardly plays, but he's also active on the roster. And Tyler Conklin, of course.
I know he still played.
Wow.
Yep. Remmers is like RG3, or not RG, right guard number 3 on the roster.
Yeah. Speaking of Dustin, you sent me that link to that old show from like June of last year. And
oh, yeah.
I listened to it for a while, and it was so funny how they had signed Conklin not long before that, and we were all saying how we didn't really want to see him catching too many passes.
Yeah.
And then look at him getting paid and having a breakout season.
Yeah. He's on pace. I pulled these numbers yesterday, in fact, to have about the same season that he had with the Vikings, with the Jets. Same targets, a couple more touchdowns, about 500 blah, blah, blah yards. So, yeah, he's earning his 20.5 mil over 3 years.
Okay. I did say when Conklin was signed, like, I was going to miss him here because of the Irv, like, question marks around him. Mm-hmm. But I also did say that the contract he signed, you know, wasn't worth paying him. So, fortunately, we got Hockenson, midseason. But Conklin would have been nice stay here.
Yeah. Yeah. If he was still a rookie or still basically the last year's price point or a little bit more, but right. we were cash strapped and still are. So those type of contracts are a little tricky. Sally, the next thing I want to ask you about is a hypothetical. Justin Jefferson is on track to have a little over 1900 yards receiving. So I want to ask you, if he ends up hitting 2000 yards, if he ends up leading the NFL in receiving, and the Vikings finish 14-3 or 13-4, can he win the MVP?
I would like to think so. I really would. But we all know that wide receivers don't win that. I guess I haven't thought about it too much. Who would be his competition? So I guess that would obviously have a lot to do with it. I know that the league respects Justin Jefferson immensely, and I do think that he would receive votes, mm-hmm. but it would have a lot to do with, I think, who he was up against, because, you know, historically just wide receivers don't win it, but it would be great for him to be the first one.
Yeah. It'd be 10 years after AP won it. And that was the last non-quarterback to win it. Right now, unless he does something awkward or weird, Mahomes is the Vegas front runner to win the thing. Hurts is nibbling. Josh Allen kind of stock went downward after he got victimized by the Vikings. But yeah, I think if he indeed had more receiving yards than Tyreek Hill, hit the 2000 mark, because the voters could kind of point to a symbol. I think he might, like you said, get some votes. Brian, could you ever see a wide receiver getting the MVP?
Could. I feel like it can eventually happen. And why not, like, change it up a little bit? I mean, because it's always a quarterback.
Yeah.
Sometimes your biggest playmaker is your receiver. You know what I mean? So
yeah,
I can see that happening. You see how AP had got it 1 year. So I can see that happening.
Did Kupp get one vote last year?
Well, let's see. He got the Super Bowl MVP, which was a big deal.
But I know somebody, I want to say it was Kupp, got one.
Yeah, vote. That sounds familiar.
So that was cool. But it was cool to also see him get it for the Super Bowl too, and not Matt Stafford, which would normally you would think be the option.
Yes, it was 39 for Rodgers, 10 for Mr. Brady, 1 for Cooper Kupp. And I'm guessing we probably know who the identity is, but I just can't remember who the voter was. So we got a little inroads there. One dude voted for Cooper Kupp, who was offensively coordinated by the one and only Kevin O'Connell. Ron, give us your Jefferson MVP speech, if you have one.
So I think it's realistic, because usually when you look at teams that has the MVP, they're usually top record or second best record in the conference or the league. But it's been a quarterback award, because usually the quarterback is the main reason on that team. So I'm not taking anything away from what Rodgers did the last 2 years, because obviously his numbers were unreal. But the only way I see Jefferson actually like getting significant votes, not even just flat out winning it, but the Chiefs have to, it's not even Mahomes, like but if the Chiefs lose a game or two, and if the Vikings are managed to get the top seed in the NFC, I think it would be really hard to not for him to not garner some of those votes away from Mahomes. Otherwise, yeah, I think it's between Mahomes and Hurts right now, just because it's hard to go against the most impactful player on one of the best teams. But it'd be great to see it. I mean, again, if he hits 2,000 yards, that benchmark alone, there's going to be people that are like, oh, Vikings finished with 2 losses on the year and he hit 2,000 yards and, you know, double-digit touchdowns, potentially. It'd be hard to look away from that.
Yep, and I will tell you, I think I've said it on this show, maybe it was a different podcast, it would be the most Kirk Cousins thing ever for a wide receiver to get 2,000 yards, and then Kirk Cousins isn't the quarterback who won the MVP. It was the first wide receiver in history that Kirk Cousins threw the ball to. It would really just put a bow on the resume when it's all said and done. All right, let's talk a bit about the Jets. Bryant, is there anything about this Jets team that's 7-4, had a wonderful draft in April, and it's come into fruition that particularly scares you about beating the Vikings at home?
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this. But Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
just the defense, but they keep rotating in their quarterback so much. I'm not sure like what's going on with that. It's been like this, like the third quarterback, correct?
Yes. They started with Flacco because Wilson was hurt. Wilson came in, looked like a child, got benched. Right. Now they're back to White Mike.
Right. So
after he got benched,
Flacco was hurt, correct? He's on IR.
No, I think they just electively went
backup.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, okay. I thought
he was hurt. All ready to go.
More games with Flacco.
they started off. Well, the thing is that they drafted Wilson with the second overall pick in 2021, so they have to try to make him work. Now, whether or not they do that or treat him like Josh Rosen from here on out remains to be seen. But yeah, on your point, they do have a marvelous defense. It ranks around fourth or fifth by almost all metrics in the NFL. And they do both things. They stop the run and they stop the pass. And special teams is about even Steven. They rank 16th and 17th in various metrics. And then it all comes down to Mike White. We saw this last year. He came in through 405 yards, I think, against the Bengals, three touchdowns or something like that. Within 2 weeks, he was playing the Bills through four picks, zero touchdowns, got benched. And they went back to Wilson, I believe. Sally, you said that your enthusiasm, the queen of enthusiasm label, was dampened a little bit by the ass kicking against Dallas. You got some of it back for the Patriots. What? Mm-hmm. Where you at now?
Well, it's definitely not where it once was still. You know how I feel about a backup quarterback. And like you said, it seems like Mike White is one of those guys. He's kind of a little Case Keenum-like. Mm-hmm. He's good to patch a hole, but he's not going to be your starter. And I think I know he was playing against the Bears defense, which is not good by any means. But for him to have over 300 yards and three touchdowns in those terrible pouring down rain conditions, he's got to be feeling pretty good about that. So, while I will agree, I mean, I'll agree with you guys. It's the defense that we need to be worried about here. I mean, I think they're like, what, fourth in scoring defense? Mm-hmm. So I'm definitely not feeling as good about it as I was when the season or when the schedule came out. W for sure. With the last couple of weeks, I think that they are getting more serious and they also are now third in the division. So they need to win this game where the Vikings have a little bit of a cushion. They know. So that could have something to do with it. And they're 4-1 on the road.
Yeah, that's wild.
So they don't seem like they're going to be super intimidated coming in there either.
Ron, Mike White was a fifth round draft pick by the Cowboys in 2018. So he's not like this brand new 22-year-old. He's 27. So he's been around a little bit. Small school dude, I think it was Western Kentucky, did the thing last year, looked good for a week, turned back into a pumpkin. And here we are playing the Vikings who, time to time, Sally will tell you all about it, struggles against these kind of quarterbacks where they just sound like anonymous humans, but then they show up and win the damn game. Are you anxietal, sir, about this game?
I'm not. Again, this is... And now I will say the way him and Zach Wilson are playing now, he's an upgrade from Wilson. Now, I'm not willing to write off Wilson in his career, although I think some of his antics are pretty, I mean, they are pretty childish. Not owning up for anything after that loss where they mustered 2 inches of play or whatever it was that they put out there, and then to just sulk on the sidelines with his hood up, like not. I mean, I guess it was raining, but he. Either way, he just doesn't seem involved. Usually if a quarterback is benched or whatever, they have a headset on and they're at least trying to go through it. I didn't see any of that body language out of him. So for a number 2 overall pick, you hope that he doesn't get that Darnold type treatment where he runs amok and he's just a journeyman. But again, Mike White gives him the better chance to win and he gives the Vikings a tougher test at this point. But the other side of that is, again, the Bears defense. There was a couple plays I saw, particularly the Garrett Wilson touchdown, the long one. He was wide open and made a guy miss in open field and was gone. So some of the numbers may be a little inflated, but again, he's an NFL quarterback as we speak. They've been playing well. Their defense is a problem, but Mike White in no way scares me. But I know Sally will attest that when I feel that way, especially, then it's never a good thing. So hopefully that doesn't come to fruition this weekend and we just take care of business.
We know it's coming down to the end of the game regardless. So, you know.
Yeah. Wouldn't it be nice if this is a game that we can finally get, just turn on the afterburners and have like a 40-17 type game and
Oh God, yeah.
Answer a lot of questions.
Oh, I would love it. I've been waiting for it for about 2 months. Actually, I'd say once they got to about 4-1 is when I was like, all right, I was idealistic. I was like, let's beat somebody good. Let's beat somebody with two scores. And then it never happened. And so now you wonder if it's even possible. But yeah, this usually the Jets sound like a team that you could do that to. But these Robert Saleh Jets are pretty defensive. Last thing I want to talk about, this was popping on Twitter before the show, is Patrick Peterson and Kyler Murray, Sally, are in a war of words on he and his cousin's show. Patrick Peterson called Murray out and said he only cares about himself. And Murray says, that's some weird shit. I thought you're supposed to be a big brother type. You should be texting me these types of things. What say you?
Well, I was a little late to the party. So if P2 had a Twitter response, I did not see that. I only saw what Kyler said. And look, we've talked about Kyler on this show. I think pretty much everyone has kind of a similar feeling on him and his work ethic. At least that's the word on the street. However, I don't understand why Kyler is acting like his expectation remains the same as when him and Patrick Peterson were on the same team. Like, you kind of lose your access to a guy when he's been playing on another team for several years. He's no longer necessarily your mentor. I don't think that they really keep in touch other than giving each other like a hug before the game. And Patrick has been very vocal at least this year when they played the Cardinals, about how he feels about where he stands with them. And he was very animated about it on game day. A month or so ago. So I feel like he's just kind of doing his little victim game with that tweet. I mean, why even acknowledge it?
Bryant, I don't past or present, I don't know if you would ever get in a type of war like this, but if you were teammates with somebody on the Vikings or Ravens removed from that team and the guy just generally got on your nerves, would you say some shit like that on a podcast like this?
It probably depends on how it was asked or like, you know,
mm-hmm.
what was asked, I may probably say, it depends. Depends on my mood.
Hey, it's a Libra thing. It depends on the mood.
It depends on the type of mood I'm in. If I'm in the mood of being blunt, then I probably would say, if not, I would probably just say a politically correct answer.
I love that.
It's very Libra.
It seems like there's always something with Kyler Murray, whether it's the study hall clause or when he said he was committed to the team in that tweet, or it was like him standing by himself. There's always something that is up. And yeah. I find it very odd that Patrick Peterson, who seems like a mature man, is going to go out of his way to lie about some young quarterback. So I'm guessing this is an extension of Peterson's.
He's probably not lying.
Yeah, I can guarantee you he's not.
Kyler's probably just saying, well, you didn't have to say it on the show. You could have just said
it. Why'd you have to tell everybody about? Yeah.
You didn't say that. You just told me.
Yeah.
Right. And I mean, I didn't hear the context in which he was asked either, but you're right. I mean, I don't think that on Patrick's show, his goal is to be outrageous and say things about other guys in the league. I don't think that what he even said is, I mean, way much worse is said about Kyler Murray every day in the national media. And I'm sure from players that we don't see, but then I saw DeAndre Hopkins was sending some sub tweets too.
Yeah. I haven't examined what those said, but I did see that they were out there and that's his guy. So
he said something along the lines of, you don't kick a man when he's down.
When you're 3-8, is that what he means? Or,
well, I'm sure that's what he means. Yeah, but yeah. I think that Patrick was asked a question, right? You know, he wasn't just on a soapbox ranting about Kyler Murray. I just think that it's strange how Kyler thinks that there should be this loyalty that Patrick owes him something when they haven't played on the same team for several years. If it was his teammate currently, I think that would be messed up. But. Mm.
Ron, what's the final word? Murray v. Peterson.
Well, I mean, Patrick Peterson seems like a smart enough guy where obviously he knows that he's getting up there in years. And he, I mean, just for football perspective, obviously he's younger than me. But So I don't think he's out there to just stir a pot and, you know, just, you know, throw a grenade, something and run away. But I mean, he's always been a guy who says it as it is, even when he was dominating with the Cardinals. Like, he was, you know, very blunt about saying things and not in a disrespectful way, so to speak. Now, again, I didn't listen to the clip, so I don't know if he was out there and how it was brought up and if he's out there taking the shots. But yeah, like the media, I mean, look at any player across the league that gets dogged on. And if a player gets asked about it, usually, like, you respect when they give an honest answer about it, especially like when you're someone who has played with him. So, I mean, I take it for what he said, because clearly he was a leader in that locker room. So, you know, he would know more than most of the players. But also, you know, you see some of the antics on the sidelines, that how he, you know, when he's yelling at his coach, and where, you know, it's, there's a certain area of respect that it doesn't seem that he garners from his teammates, but it also doesn't look like he goes out of his way to care about that, which, good for him. Like, he's a talented player. I wish him nothing but the best. I hope he plays well, as long as he's not playing the Vikings. But I mean, people are so soft these days, even if it is some sort of criticism and meant to be a constructive thing, people don't take it that way. So, again, I'm not, I mean, I would side with Peterson on this, again, sight unseen, not knowing how he said it, but I would say a guy who's been in the league, you know, is a future Hall of Famer, been doing it at an all pro level as long as he has, there's some merit with when he speaks.
I never followed Murray at all, so I didn't know these things about him.
Oh yeah. He's kind of just a moody little guy.
Oh, yes. Really?
Yeah.
Well, the best,
I know that.
Well, he's yelling at Cliff Kingsbury, like, or what was it? Like he just told him, shut the F up, like, or I think something it was like
calm,
that.
Calm the,
like,
fuck down.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And then, you know, Hopkins is asking him, what are you looking at? And, like, he's, you know, yelling back at him. And he just seems, he's a fiery personality. You know, he's whatever. Again, hell of an athlete, hell of a talent. But, you know, who knows?
I think
my funniest thing will always be with Kyler is the fact that when there's and I don't play Call of Duty, but when there's a double XP points weekend or whatever, he's winless in those weekends. So, like, they keep joking around saying that all he does is play Call of Duty, which is why when Peterson what did he, or someone on the defense got a turnover, Peterson makes the gesture of, like, video gaming, so kind of taking shots. So maybe there is something a little bit more to that, little bit of beef, but you know.
Yeah, he sat down with the control, did the controller thing,
and put the headset on. Is it?
Someone on Reddit did, like, an analytical deep dive of every single Call of Duty event, and then comparing that to how Kyler Murray played the next day. And it's like 4 years of data or something. It's not just like he did a couple weeks.
Yeah.
And it's kind of crazy to see.
About a month ago, I think on Thursday Night Football, with this Call of Duty joke or reality, Richard Sherman also called into question Kyler Murray's attitude or leadership or personality, and he linked it to the Call of Duty thing. So I find it very coincidental that two future Hall of Fame cornerbacks would be chiding the same guy completely erroneously. Like, you know, oh, they're going after this guy, poor guy. No, I think there's probably smoke there with the fire.
But, speaking of Richard Sherman, he said that Mike White is a franchise quarterback.
Yeah, I think I saw that too. Yeah, yay. Well, he could be that in week 14. That'll be great.
So watch out.
Yeah. All right. So,
did he mean a franchise quarterback or a Jets franchise quarterback? Because they've been lacking in that area. So there could be some context there where, just like us, if we get a rookie kicker that looks good, he's our franchise kicker. Doesn't mean he is.
True.
I've got Vikings 27-13. Sally, you?
I wanted to ask you, has anyone been correct on these?
Brian's usually pretty good. I think overall, I haven't nailed a score yet. I got pretty darn close in one of them, but I can't remember which one.
All right. Well, you know me, I got to account for a missed kick. So I will say 26-24.
That sounds like a Viking score. Ron, what do you got?
What did you say, Dustin?
27-13.
Okay. So yeah, I was thinking along the lines that we were going to get 27, 28. But yeah, like Sally said, I can never go with a round seven number with our ticker. It's just, it's not a given. So yeah, 27-17, I'd say. So I think that the offense does get some traction here in this game.
Brian, take us off air with your prediction, sir.
I'll say like 24-20.
24-20 Vikings?
Vikings, yeah.
Okay.
I feel like it'll be – because I feel like their defense is pretty good, so I don't see them scoring like a whole lot, but I feel like they'll come out scoring, you know what I mean, the first drive or first, you know, and then I feel like they'll pick back up in the fourth quarter for some reason.
That's every game.
Yeah. For some reason.
Oh, yeah. We have this certified lullaby offensively, yeah. Second, third quarter, and then they come back. All right. We'll be back Monday night to talk about the recap of this Jets game, and then we'll transition into Lions week. So you have a wonderful night, all right?
You too. See you Sunday.
All right. Later.
Bye, guys.
Right. Have a good one.
Craig is usually a fan of water cooler talk, but it's draft season, and that's all anyone wants to talk about. The Athletic has loads of articles about this year's draft, but Greg doesn't have The Athletic, so now he's filling up his water bottle in the bathroom sink, which, to remind you, is the sink people use after they use the bathroom. Get The Athletic and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.